So I'm Todd Stern. I was the special envoy for climate change under President Obama. I actually got my start on these issues, working on them back in 1997 for President Clinton. I am currently a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a distinguished fellow at the World Resources Institute, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Now, what are the most concerning impacts from your perspective of that decision to step away from the Paris Agreement?
Well, let me look at it both from the domestic perspective and the international perspective. From the domestic perspective, it's not just that the president has announced that he wants to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, but also a whole range of other policies that President Obama had put in place. President Trump is also trying to walk away from. So policies that the president had put in place with respect to power plants and methane and vehicles, to make vehicles more efficient and so forth, that will be damaging. Some of those things are tied up in litigation, so we don't know exactly where they'll go. On the international side, the United States was a key player in getting the Paris Agreement done. We had strong relationships with many countries diplomatically in doing that, none more important than China, but with many, many others. And the U.S. is a big leader. Madeleine Albright called the United States the indispensable nation in other contexts, but I always found that that was quite true. So for countries now to see that the U.S. has stepped away and is pulling back, I would fear that it will undermine the level of commitment and ambition by many other countries. I don't think countries will pull out. I just think that the level of engagement may be reduced. And the other thing that I see right now is that there are a number of elements in the ongoing negotiations. Surprisingly, there actually are further negotiations that happen to implement Paris. Guidelines that have to be negotiated for issues like transparency and the transparency system and other things. And with the U.S. not participating at a political, which is to say very senior level, it will make it harder to keep the kinds of core compromises and the kind of delicate balances that made Paris possible. It'll be harder to keep those, to keep on target with those.
As you mentioned, it's a question of leadership, and I'm wondering, with the U.S. pulling out, why aren't we seeing other countries dropping out?
I think very simply because people understand that climate change is a monumental problem, and that that you know, if countries pulled out of Paris and Paris collapsed, you just have to recreate it somehow, and we would lose that much more time. Because climate change, here's one thing that I can tell you for sure: climate change is not going away. It's getting worse. Even if we took Herculean steps and did everything that we should do, it will be some quite substantial period of time before we stop putting more fossil fuels into the atmosphere.
You mentioned that other countries see the importance of action on this. I'm wondering if it's unique in the United States to have this divide over the validity of climate change research.
It's maybe not unique, but it's pretty particular to the United States. I mean, the only other country that I have seen where you've had over the years, and I think probably less now, but over the years, I've sort of looked back over the last 7, 8, 9 years, a lot of political division with regard to climate change is Australia. But they're not in the place that we're in now. I think very interestingly, if you look at places like Europe, the parties are called different things, but let's just use terms that are common here. If you have essentially the liberals in power, and then the conservatives come in power, and then the liberals come in power, climate policy doesn't change very much. I mean, you have a pretty broad consensus of support in Europe. There's not so much an issue of, we don't even think this is real. We think this is made up. We think this is, this is a hoax. Or any, you just, that's much more particular to the United States.
When President Trump announced that he would be pulling the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement, several states stepped up to say that they would aim to meet or exceed those targets. I'm wondering if this is enough.
So you had a huge mobilization of commitment and action by states and cities and others in response to the president's announcement that he intended to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement. I think that if the question is whether it's enough for some number of states to take action to meet the target that the United States took in 2015, the answer is no. It's not enough, but it certainly helps push in the right direction. We took a very ambitious target back then deliberately because we wanted to push the envelope and do what needs to be done on climate change. So we took a target of 26% to 28% reduction of greenhouse gases below 2005 levels by 2025. So that's our target. That'll be would have been, you know, challenging to get there under any circumstances, and it'll certainly be much more challenging to get there in light of what the president has done.
I'm wondering if this move from Trump to pull out of Paris shows that the climate change movement really needs to diversify and reach beyond sort of those people who are already engaged.
Well, look, in the United States, I think that there is no question that that political the level of political support needs to ramp way, way up. This isn't just a question of whether you answer a poll saying you believe in climate change, yes, no. It's the intensity of concern about it and the degree to which voters, frankly, will start to hold their representatives accountable for whether they take action on climate change or not. And so far, I think it is not viewed as a dangerous move for a member of Congress to be lukewarm or negative on climate change. That's not been bad for their political health. That has to become bad for their political health. That's just the way our system works.
How do we reach people who are currently in a political silo that focuses much more on immediate economic concerns or social concerns?
Well, these questions about how we reach people and how you persuade people are very, very tough questions. I mean, there's an inherent reality about climate change, which makes it difficult no matter who the audience is, because you think about it, climate change is an issue where the damages are certainly there, they are coming, and they're upon us, but it feels like it's a thing that is a little bit more distant. It doesn't feel like the thing, whether it's your healthcare coverage or the wages you're getting at your job or whether you have a job or any number of other issues that are dollar and cents kind of issues that motivate people right now or on the international side. It's not the war that's going to happen tomorrow. And so those things naturally make the effort to persuade people or to illuminate people about the seriousness of the issue difficult. So that's number one. Number two is we have to think just as much about who the messengers are as the message, right? Because if there's anything that we've learned in the last couple of years of politics in this country, it's that we're very tribal. Politics is also often very tribal. You need to be able to find people that are going to be credible and persuasive to the tribe you're talking to, right? So you can get, you could send me out to talk to various people, and I'm sure they might be nice to me, but I wouldn't persuade them because they need to hear it from people who they trust and they believe in. And the interesting thing is, I think that there are people who understand the importance of this issue and that it is a real issue and needs to be dealt with in all of those various different tribes, if you will, that exist in the United States. But there's got to be a way to find those people and have them speak to those who would find them credible.
I'm wondering, as we look forward, what is the best case scenario from here for the United States?
Well, the best case scenario is, I guess the best case scenario would be that the president decides that between now and the point in November 2020 when he could actually pull out, that it would be a wiser course to stay in. What the president did on June 1st of 2017 last year is to announce the way he talked about it is could easily have led people to believe that he was pulling out on the spot. In fact, he cannot do that. And in the agreement itself, makes it clear that based on the timing during which the United States first joined, we could not, it would be 2019 in November when the United States could first submit a formal statement of intent to withdraw. So it will become effective, if I have the date right, November 4th, 2020, which kind of ironically is the day after our next presidential election. But that's when it could actually become final.
So best case scenario is that that doesn't happen?
Best case scenario is that that doesn't happen, or if it happens, that that at the soonest time possible, the U.S. comes back in to the Paris regime. That's with respect to the onward development of the international regime. That is an important piece. It's a necessary but by no means sufficient part of the equation in dealing with climate change. And so the other thing that that we would hope, that I would hope, is that more and more states and more cities take stronger and stronger action, that companies take stronger and stronger action, that the effort to, you know, the innovation effort to develop new technologies and better technologies in areas where we've better wind, better solar, but also all sorts of other things, that continues apace, that the rest of the world keeps acting with as much determination and commitment as possible, and that the U.S. is fully back in, shoulder to the wheel, as soon as possible.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks.